The Gestalt Gardener podcast is brought to you by Varicosity Vein Center, providing health assessment screenings and compassionate care to improve your vascular functionality and quality of life. Our doctors and vein specialists offer solutions to painful varicose veins, spider veins, and other venous diseases to our patients. Now offering complimentary vein screenings in Jackson, Madison, and Ridgeland. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
Okie dokie, folks, welcome back. I'm horticulturist Phil Rushing, and I'm going to try to take my horticulture hat off as much as possible. You know, that's so left brain. Horticulture is sort of like crop production. If you're trying to fill a freezer or get yard of the month or get a blue ribbon someplace, you're just trying to have a beautiful showpiece out there. If it's goal-oriented, there's a lot of little tricks and tips and things like that I can share with you, maybe a little problem-solving. That's horticulture, it's goal-oriented. Gardening, on the other hand, it's more process. We're enjoying who we are, where we are, what we're doing. Sometimes it's not that fun, and we're looking for ways to make it, you know, less tasky, I guess. But the main thing is, no matter what your goal is or whether you're just trying to enjoy the ride, if you've got questions, you've got comments, you've got unusual things you're not sure about, maybe your squash is making squash but they're not getting big, they're just falling off, or maybe you've got some kind of really weird thing going on, or just something fun to share with other gardeners, this is a good chance. It's a nonprofit thing. I hear some music in the background. Is that me, Java?
No, that was me. Sorry about that.
Whoa! Wait a second. Did Java push the wrong button?
It doesn't happen often, but it happens.
I'm calling you out, brother. I'm calling you out because that's okay, man. Hey, listen, we've got the phone lines wide open this morning. You ready to take some phone calls about gardening?
Oh, yeah, they can always call us 1-877-672-7464, 1-877-MPB-RING.
All right, man. Folks, you heard my boss here say it. It's a call-in program, and you have an opportunity to talk to somebody and I could try to tell you anything. So some of my ideas seem kind of off the wall to some people, I guess, because even though I'm very tightly wound and there's a lot of little details about horticulture and gardening that can make a difference, where difference is important, a lot of us are just trying to enjoy ourselves and sometimes need permission to relax. And I'm the guy for that. So you want to give us a call if you've got anything that's related to gardening, the weather, anything like that, insects, blight disease, lawn care, shrubs, pruning, vegetables, herbs, whatever. Give us a call. It's toll-free from anywhere, 1-877-MPB-RING. We got the lines wide open right now. I've got about an hour or so just to chat about it. We have some real cheesy music coming up in a few minutes, super cheesy music. But let me throw out a couple of things. First of all, I am still overseas. I'm in northern England, and I'm not trying to brag or anything like that, but I know how hot it is, and we're all, you know, wish we could get a good rain. But, you know, the truth is, where I am right now, it's cool. Matter of fact, it's going to get up tomorrow into the mid-60s. So I can grow some stuff here that won't thrive in a Mississippi June, like English peas. Matter of fact, I planted some English peas a couple of weeks ago, and they're up about 6 inches, and they started sending out those little tendrils to wrap around things. So this weekend, I fixed them up by making a frame out of some willow stems. I cut some willow stems, made a little wooden frame, to make them easier for picking and keep them away from the slugs. I also stuck in a few flowering plants to make it look more garden-esque. I put some white dusty miller, a spreading verbena, and an old-fashioned flower called sanvitalia. It's a weird plant. It's an old-fashioned plant native to Mexico called creeping zinnia. Looks sort of like miniature black-eyed Susans on a spreading plant. I'm rooting some rosemary, too, which will make roots in just water in about 3 weeks. Anyway, give us a call, 1-877-MPB-RING. Let's start out this morning by going down to McGee and talking with George. Good morning, sir.
Hello. How you doing?
Fine. What's going on?
Well, I have a question. I've only moved here in the past year, and I grow indeterminate tomatoes. And,
right.
I'm from the Houston area, so I know my tomatoes are going to burn out at some point this summer. And yeah. I was wondering when I should stick some suckers in the ground so they can root up and be my fall tomatoes.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And oddly enough, even though Houston is, about 400, not quite 500 miles from us, we have almost the same conditions. You know, it doesn't get a whole lot hotter there than it does here for some reason. They're very similar climates. But when the temperatures start hovering in the upper 90s for several days, those flowers and little fruit's going to fall off. So you can plant tomatoes in the Jackson area as late as in the McGee area, as late as around the first or second week in August and still get a crop before frost. So I start rooting them sometime next month. Sometime in July, and plan on setting them out first part of August, first couple of weeks of that, and they'll be fine.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I want to ask you a question first, George. Sure. Why indeterminate? Did you say determinate or indeterminate?
Indeterminate. I just like to. What I do is I make a big frame out of the cast iron pipe, like for gas lines. You know, like the 10-foot.
Yeah.
Poles. I make like a rectangular frame out of it, and I just run strings down it, and I grow them up those strings. They get 8 or 10 foot tall, and I just pick tomatoes off of them. Right now, they're about 7 foot tall.
Don't give up on the plants. You know, sometimes we have problems with leaf diseases that cause the plants to turn brown, the leaves going up the plant. But, you know, it's possible to keep indeterminate vines alive over the summer with a little bit of fertilizer every now and then. I'm not pushing the roots on, but you know, if your old vines look good, let them keep on going.
Okay. Yeah, I was just going to plant some suckers kind of right next to the big ones, and in case they didn't make it, I'd just string them up the same string.
There you go. Well, be sure when you plant them in the summertime, you can plant them a little bit deeper than you do in the spring, because tomatoes are about the only vegetable that roots up now in the stem, and cover the ground with mulch to keep a little bit cooler. So plant them a little bit.
I've got a drip line and mulch and all sorts of stuff going. So.
Fantastic, man. Well, good luck on it, Jordan. Let us know how it works.
I will. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. Okay, next slide up to Jackson. Talk with Jesse. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Felder.
How are you?
I'm fine. Wanted to check with you. I have some flower beds in the back of my yard that have azaleas and a bunch of other things growing in them. They're all underneath a bunch of trees, and over the years, the leaves have just kind of piled up in the under there underneath the bushes, and I'm wondering whether that all needs to be mulched or whether I can just leave it there and let it decay on its own without any problem.
Well, you're talking about the tree leaves?
Yes.
Yeah, they'll decompose on their own, but one thing you can do that'll help a lot is a swing by a garden center that sells this stuff called cottonseed meal. Cottonseed meal, it's a natural product. It's got a lot of nitrogen in it, which will help your plants, but also it's got protein in it. And when I say a light dusting, I mean a pint jar will cover an area about 10 feet by 10 feet. You know, it doesn't take much. But if you'll just dust a little cottonseed meal over there, you'll get earthworms that are like 10 inches long. They'll help eat those leaves and circulate them down around the roots. Instead of them just composting on top of the ground, the worms will actually dig it down deep into the ground, which helps your plant roots grow a whole lot better, too. So in other words, feed the worms a little cottonseed meal, that little protein, and they will really help the depth of all your plants, as well as get rid of those leaves.
I've heard you mention that before, and I've been meaning to call you and ask you, could you just do that in your yard? In other words, my yard is like concrete, and I was just wondering maybe if I just put it over my grass, that would help the worms in the yard to improve the quality of the soil in my yard.
Well, it will, but in the case of grass, just the grass clippings alone will feed the worms. So if you'll put on your lawn a small amount of this long, slow acting type of lawn food, you can use cottonseed meal. It's a little on the expensive side, but it goes a long way. It's hard to spread it that thin on the lawn is what I'm saying, because it's such a small amount. You know, you figure 10 pounds will cover 1,000 square feet. It's hard to spread dust like that. But anyway, it would help. But I hate to sound like a broken record, but if you'll raise your mower up a little bit, that would help probably more than anything, because worms do eat grass clippings at night.
Okay, well, I already cut it as high as I can cut it.
Yeah, well, that's about the best you can do. And if you'll give it just a little bit of a good – look, if you got like St. Augustine or Centipede or something?
Got Zoysia in the front and St. Augustine in the back.
Okay, they're different kind of grasses. Zoysia actually does better. It's cut about a medium setting. St. Augustine. So I would cut it, you know, not on your high setting, but the next to high setting. But you know, that'd be good for both your grasses. And you know, if you use a slow acting type of lawn food, like what they sell for centipede grass, that'll work perfectly well on both of those. And it gives a long, steady, slow feeding. And I don't know if you've ever seen how worms work, but they come up at night, they leave their tail in the hole in the ground, and they swirl around part out of the hole, and they find bits of the grass, and they pull it down in the holes and eat it that way. So they'll recycle the grass clippings about as much as anything else. So cotton pea meal won't hurt, but I wouldn't lay it on thick.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much. I appreciate it. Have a
okay,
great
Jesse. Stay cool and hydrated.
I'll do it.
All right. Okay. Hey, Java, have you been following the that raccoon thing up in Minneapolis?
Yeah, I saw it, and we actually talked about it, you know, on our animal show, Creature Comforts, just yesterday. Yeah.
What was the general consensus? Folks, in case y'all don't know what we're talking about, there was a up in St. Paul, there was a raccoon that somebody noticed was on top of I guess it was a big tall building up there.
Yeah, it was actually the I think the Minnesota Public Broadcasting Building.
Oh yeah, that's right. Well, it got stranded on the office tower. People were upset about it, but gradually it climbed up the roof of like a 23 the Mississippi, excuse me, Minneapolis Public Broadcasting thing, 23 stories high.
Yeah, it was. I myself didn't know raccoons could like do their Spider-Man impression. Like it was on the side of the wall, like just hanging on.
Well, I have one that lives up under my back deck, and it's a pretty thing. You know, they're kind of bold and all, but and they ended up catching it in a live trap with some cat food, and they released it someplace else. But I think I've got a theory, Java. I think I know why the raccoon was in town to begin with. Well, as you know, Minnesota is right next to both North and South Dakota, the states up there. I think the raccoon was on a mission, which brings me to a Beatles tune from my youth as performed by Lena Horne. You want to play that before we go into our break? This is my theory about why that raccoon was in Minneapolis to begin with.
Now, somewhere in the black mining hills of Dakota, there lived a young boy named Rocky Raccoon. One day, his woman run off with another guy. Hit young Rocky in the eye. Rocky didn't like that. He said, I'm gonna get that boy. So one day, he walked into town and booked himself a room in the local saloon.
So you telling me this was over a lady raccoon, man?
Well, I mean, you know, Dakota's right next to Minnesota, so I think he was looking for his woman coon at the local top of National Public Radio in Minnesota type of thing. He was looking for the bright light.
The things they do for love.
That's my theory. Anyway, let's take a quick break, man. I appreciate it. I'm horticulturist Stella Rushing. This is Mississippi Public Broadcast. We got the lines wide open. Give us a call at 1-877-MPB-RING. Okay, that's folks. Welcome back. Horticulture Stella Rushing. Hope you enjoyed that little segue. We've got some lines open if you want to give us a call. It's about gardening. If you got questions or comments, give us a call. It's toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. Also, if you want to shoot us an email, garden@mpbonline.org. By the way, if you know of any garden-related events coming up that I can help promote, shoot us an email. I love to promote garden stuff anywhere close to where people are listening. That's garden@mpbonline.org. Meanwhile, let's talk with Will. He's calling from Jackson. Morning, sir.
Hey, Felder.
Sir.
Got a quick question for you. I've got some kind of little beetles. They're tan. They're about a quarter inch long, and they are munching up a lot of my vegetable leaves, mostly strawberries, but they're also going after the rose bushes and stuff. They're munching little holes in the leaves.
Yeah, there's several beetles that do that. A couple of things come to mind. First of all, beetles If there's just eating holes here and there, I really wouldn't worry about it. As long as the leaves are still green, the plant's still growing, for the most part, you know, that's more cosmetic than anything. So I wouldn't worry about it unless it's just destroying the parts you want to eat or just wiping out the new growth. And the reason why is because it's really hard to kill beetles. They're unlike soft-bodied bugs. Beetles are hard-bodied. And what it takes to kill them sometimes cannot be good to spray on stuff like that you're about to eat. If I were going to use anything at all, Will, I would use this stuff, anything that has as an active ingredient, pyrethrin. Pyrethrin is a natural product made from xanthan leaves. It's low toxicity. I would not spray it directly on strawberries you're going to eat within next week or so, even though it's natural. But if you'll spray the underside of the leaves late in the day with pyrethrin, that's where the bee will stay overnight. That'll work about as well as any kind of chemical you can use and be a little bit safer, too. But do it late in the day when the bees are all in. It'll work overnight. And except for soft things like strawberries, I wouldn't worry about getting it on most vegetables.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
Okay. That's just a, you know, it's just a sort of a, it ain't going to be easy, but that'll help.
Thanks so much.
Alrighty, let's go down to Meadville. George, what's going on in your neck of the woods?
Wet down here, but look, my question is, I planted some seed. I want to grow me some fall tomato plants. When should I plant the actual plant?
Well, you know, you can plant tomatoes any time in June, July, early August and still make it, but I would hold off until the middle of June. Are they already up and growing?
No, I just already planted.
Okay, that should be fine, because it's going to take them over 4 or 5 weeks to get really big enough to set out. So I'd wait till the middle of June, the middle of July or so to set them out by the 1st of August. Let me give you a real quick tip, George. I don't know if you've grown these things before from seed, but once those plants come up and get their first little sets of real leaves, put them out where they get at least 3 or 4 hours of direct sunshine, because that's what makes them sturdy and stocky. Real sunshine and also the wind blowing them around a little bit, that makes them sturdy and stocky to the long and leggy. So give them some sunshine, a little bit of wind, and at least for 3 or 4 hours. That'll sturdy them up.
All right, I got one more question.
Okay.
What is the most acid-tasting tomato that you can plant?
What a good question, and it is impossible to answer that. And I'll tell you why. We've done tests on 150 or more different kinds of tomatoes, and oddly enough, they all have the same acidity, just some have more sugar than others. You go online very much?
No, uh-uh.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, if you shoot me an email, there's probably half a dozen tomatoes that have less sugar, which makes them more acidic. But stay tuned and let's see what other people call in and say about it, because I tend to go for the ones that have a little more sugar and a little more sweet things. So off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you what the most bite you're going to get. But stay tuned. And if not, if you get a chance, stay tuned next week, and I'll come back with have a little research.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Appreciate it. Okay, folks, it is a challenge. Tomatoes are all acidic, but some have got a lot of natural sugars in them that cover it up. If any of you have one that has a real acid bite to it, that people are likely to find, give us a call. George is down in Meadville looking for some tomatoes that have that good old make you wink one eye type of acid bite. Give us a call at 1-877-MPB-RING. We've got the lines wide open. You want to give us a call, 1-877-MPB-RING. By the way, let me mention a couple of things that I do during the week. Mississippi Press Association, which represents all the local and daily weekly newspapers in Mississippi, sends my weekly column out to dozens of weekly papers and daily papers in the state. So if you're interested in reading my columns, they're timely. I write them specifically for us, and because I don't sell anything, I can just have a little bit of fun. Anyway, check with your local paper, whether it's a daily or weekly. See if your editors want to plan on including this. And because it doesn't cost me anything, if they belong to the Mississippi Press Association, it's a free service from them. So let us know about that. If you want to give us a call, talk about gardening, 1-877-MPB-RING. I also want to mention that this past week I went out to a Walls Garden. It's out close to Wales. Wales is in the western part of Great Britain. Fantastic herb garden, a sunken garden, a really nice stumpery. A stumpery is where people take old stumps and logs, instead of throwing them away, they place them carefully together, stand some of them up, and then they plant ferns and hosses and other woodland plants. It's an interesting use of old tree debris. One of my neighbors in Jackson has it in his front yard. Rather than haul off this big old fallen tree, he moved bits up around and turned it to a nice little shade garden with the added benefit of being an attractive wildlife habitat. Anyway, back to this English thing. On this week's blog of mine, I uploaded some images. I took at last week's Royal Horticulture Society Chatsworth Flower Show, where bottle trees are featured along with an unbelievable array of other garden art plants. If you want to check it out, go to my blog. I don't sell anything. It's called felderrushing.blog, or just felderrushing blog. It'll take you to it. This week's Chatsworth Flower Show. Okay, Javi, you say we had somebody who called and had the scoop?
Yeah, we did have a caller. She couldn't really stay on the line as long to, you know, talk to you directly. But she did have a question about trimming a pomegranate, about, I guess, how to and when is the right time to trim a pomegranate tree.
That's a good question. You know, they're more like big bushes than trees. Pomegranates bloom in the late spring. They have kind of an orange-red flower. And pruning it now is not going to hurt it for next year. But if you're going to prune it, I go ahead and get it done pretty soon in the next month or so the new growth has time to come out, mature, and set flower buds for next year's flowers before fall. So the main thing, if you're going to prune any kind of spring-blooming plant, of course, you don't want to cut off any fruit that's on it, but they're already done flowering. As long as you don't cut off any fruit, you can prune it back any time from now until the first part of August. I really wouldn't prune any shrub hard after August because it doesn't have time for the new growth to mature before fall. And I'd get any spring-blooming plants pruned sometime this month. Anyway, let's go down to Gulfport and talk with Rita. Hey, Rita, good morning.
Hi, Velder.
Howdy.
I have a question about my crepe myrtle. I have two that I really like a lot, and they are right now in full bloom.
Yeah.
But my blooms are not lasting very long. They turn brown quickly.
You know, it's kind of unusual. The only thing I can pick up, there's not much that affects crepe myrtle blooms themselves because they're little small things, individual flowers on stems. Unless you have some kind of insect that's infecting that little bud, there's a tiny insect called a thrip. I'll tell you how you tell a thrip. Do you have any roses or gardenias nearby?
No, I don't.
Well, if you those are the easiest ways to find through. Take some of the crepe myrtle buds that are just beginning to open, and thump them really hard on a white piece of paper. Look for tiny little cigar-shaped insects. They're two or three will fit on a typewritten letter I. They're little skinny things, and they bore down into flower buds and damage the petals before they open. This happens to gardenias and roses a lot. Unfortunately, there's not much you can do about it because they're so small. You have to spray something that's going to poison a whole plant, and that ain't easy to do on a big tree. So,
yeah,
I don't know what else to say. There's nothing practical I can recommend.
I didn't know if it had anything to do with the rain or lack of rain.
Well, it won't be lack of rain. Crepe myrtle bloom in cemeteries, but it could be that because of all this rain, maybe fertilizer or something, they might have grown a little bit extra lush this year, and that tends to promote leafy growth over flower growth. A lot of times plants will shed flowers if they had too much fertilizer plus too much water. Anyway, that's nothing but educated guess.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Ride around, enjoy other people. Go to the craft store, get you some little blossoms, and wire them on. That'll make you feel better.
All right, thank you.
Okay, I guess we probably ought to take a little bit of a break, Java, because I'm starting to get a little silly there, wasn't I?
Just be a Felder.
Hey, before we do that, I got an email from a guy named John. I guess it's Bo, B-A-U-G-H. He sent me a link of a competition in Japan. Java, I'm not making this up. I'm going to send it to you. It's a competition in Japan where landscapers Japanese landscapers, on one day a year, they get together in one place with their little pickup truck, little miniature pickup trucks, and they build gardens in the back of it. I mean, entire landscapes with water fountains and fish and all sorts, just unbelievable little landscapes in the back of their truck. Can't drive them anywhere because they're too big. But I mean, we need to figure some way to get this out so people who want to see it can look at it. It's really incredible. It gives me the idea of maybe something we could do in the Jackson or in Mississippi sometime. Anyway, Japanese gardeners, landscape gardeners, one day they do competitions in building entire gardens in the back of their pickup truck. So cool. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. I'm Horticulture Still the Rushing. This is the Gestalt Gardener. We're going to be talking about nothing gardening at the end of the hour. Give us a call. It's toll free 1-877-MPB-RING. And I thought I'd play a little tune in honor of Father's Day. So I hope you enjoy this. We'll be back with more of the Gestalt Gardener here on MPB right after this.
Dear old dad, we love you so.
Today, Father, is Father's Day, and we're giving you a tie. It's not much we know, it's just our way of showing you we think you're a regular guy. You say that it was nice of us to bother, but it really was a pleasure to fuss. For according to our mother, you're our father, and that's good enough for us. The tie that you got didn't cost such a lot, but we will give you the same tie next year.
You tell us it was nice of us to bother, but it really was a pleasure to fuss through.
For they say a child can only have one father, and you are the one for us.
Yes, you are the
jazz can be just what the doctor ordered. Join me, Meredith Michelle, with WJSU's Evening Jazz, 7 to 10 weeknights on MPB Music Radio.
Okie doke, folks, welcome back. Horticulture Stella Rushing, talking about gardening. And by the way, Java, I may have beaten you to something. I know every time I mention something, I might be online, you immediately start looking at your phone. So I'd be surprised if you didn't already Google. But I went to both Yahoo and Google, and I just typed in Japanese truck gardens or truck gardens in Japan. Either way, and it takes you right to pictures of these Japanese landscapers doing the coolest little garden, complete gardens, even with live fish and everything. So go online and just type in any combination of Japanese truck gardens or truck gardens in Japan, and you'll see exactly what I'm in. I really appreciate John Bo for sending me that link. Now, let's slide out the south a little bit and go up to New York. Hey, Michael, what makes you call a southerner about gardening?
I'm actually from the south. I'm driving up in this area right now.
Okay, what you got going on?
I wanted to ask you a question about building a composting bin.
Yeah.
I got some home time coming up. I drive trucks. I got some home time coming up, and I already have a hydroponic system set up for growing lettuce, but I had some a friend of mine gave me one of his tomatoes that he had grown in his composting area, and it was delicious. And I was thinking about doing my tomatoes hydroponically, because I usually grow a lot and bring it back out on the truck with me. But the taste of that tomato was amazing.
Okay, and, I don't know if you're aware that I actually grow vegetables and herbs in the back of my 1988 Ford F-150, and I've driven it to New York with tomatoes and peppers in the back of it. But I don't know how you're going to get away with that with an 18-wheeler unless you got a skylight in the back of it.
Oh,
you're talking about growing some and taking them with you.
Yeah, yeah, and then I bring them up here with me, you know.
Okay, here's the deal. First of all, tomatoes need sunshine. So you have to put this thing out where it gets some sun, right? All a compost bin is a fenced-in leaf pile. So anything you can make, you can get wooden pallets. You can wire three wooden pallets together, or four of them if you want to, and just pile stuff in that, and then plant stuff around the edge of it if you want to. Or else you can get four posts, like 4x4 posts, and set some, you know what hardware cloth is, that half-inch hardware cloth?
Yes, sir.
You know, you can stretch that around three sides of it, just pile it up. To me, it's better to have two bins side-by-side so you can be filling one up with leaves 1 year. You plant it the next year while you fill the other one up the next year. That way you just go back and forth, filling one and growing in one, back and forth. You don't have to turn it or aerate it, do all that gardening stuff. Just pile everything in it, leaves, food scraps, eggshells, banana peels, anything that will break down you can put in there. It takes a while to break down, though, so you need to start on it this fall, and then you can plant stuff in it next spring. And then once you get going, if you have two bins side by side, you can just fill one and one back and forth, but it needs to be at least 3.5 or 4 feet by 3.5 or 4 feet, you know, to really make an effective pile. If it's smaller than that, it's just going to sit there.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Remember, it's a concept, not a recipe. All you need is some kind of fence that holds a bunch of leaves and food scraps and stuff like that. Coffee grounds, anything that'll break down is going to make it richer. And start it this fall. Planned in next spring, and you will have bragging rights at every truck stop along the way.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Hey, and watch your brakes. Friend of mine named Mark just burned his tractor trailer up in North Dakota because his brakes overheated, burned it up on the side of the road. Be careful.
Okay. Yes, sir. Thank you. Appreciate you. Have a nice day.
Appreciate the call. Okay, Michael wants to take tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, and bragging rice on the road, and I salute that. Hey, let's go down to Adams County. Hey, Barbara, what's going on? You say Adams County like you're not really from Natchez or something.
Hello?
Hello, are you from Natchez or outside Natchez? Yes, I can. How are you?
Oh, okay, I'm sorry, Barbara. But I enjoy hearing you. I thoroughly enjoy it. But at any rate, I've got a problem with a tree. I couldn't say it right there. It's a bay leaf. It's about 20 feet tall, and I've had it for a long time. But all of a sudden, it's got a lot of leaves on it. Look like they're dead, but they're still green, too. And I was wondering if there's something I can spray on it. I wouldn't know what to spray on it. It's tall.
Not really. This is the kind of bay leaf that you cook with, right?
Right.
Okay, keep in mind, we had a really cold spell back in January, and bay trees, they'll grow up as far as Memphis, but the further north you go, the smaller they get, the more damage they get from cold weather. So I'm going to suspect, too, that first of all, Barbara, look on it, and if the leaves on the ends of the branches look fine, then it's just last year's leaves that are looking bad. In other words, the stuff that went through this winter, it's going to look rough right now. As long as it's got new growth on the ends of the branches, though, the plant's fine. You may just need to prune it back every now and then like you would an overgrown shrub. Instead of keeping it like a tree, grow it like a big bush, and just cut it back every now and then to get some strong new growth on it.
Well, see, I've let this one grow. Like I said, it's 20 feet tall. And
yeah, which is pretty tall.
I know we had a cold winter, but it just amazed me. I don't know anywhere near as much as you do. So I don't know how these things are supposed to go. And I'm supposed to prune it down? How tall should I let it get?
Well, you know, my mother had a bay tree up in Indianola, which is about 150, 160 miles north of you. And every now and then, she would just cut it down like a bush and sprout back out.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Well, now, this tree is skinny, but real tall. And then the new leaves that are coming out, I'm seeing that about the new leaves come out green, but right away they turn brown again. That's why I thought maybe it needed to be sprayed with something.
It has so many
dead looking leaves on it.
Is there something to spray on it, or maybe just
cut it down because it's a skinny tree. It's one little.
Okay. First of all, sprays don't cure diseases. They protect undiseased stuff from getting disease. So there's no spray that's going to help that plant. See, so what I would do is I would just prune it, start it back over. You know how sometimes azaleas look really bad after hard winter. People cut them down, sprout back out. You can do a bay the same way.
Okay, just cut it back down to about how tall should I let it get?
It's up to you because it'll sprout back out. And, you know, I've seen azaleas that are 10 feet tall, people cut down to knee high and they come back out.
Okay.
I guess I'm going to
cut it back then because I hate to leave. I mean, I've had it for years and years. Okay.
Well, sometimes they need to be what they call rejuvenated, and that's what this kind of pruning is called. An old azalea camellia.
I shouldn't spray it then. Just cut it back.
There's no spray that's going to – it's not an insect or disease that you're spraying for. So, you know, there's no spray that would work.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your help. You're a good man.
If you need some more information, Barbara, shoot me an email. I can get a whole lot more detail, but just send me an email if you have – or some pictures or something. Maybe we could take it a step further.
Okay. And your email address, I'm supposed to know by now.
That's real easy. garden@mpbonline.org.
Okay. I will do that. Thank you so much.
Okay, good luck on it. All righty. Sometimes, you know, folks, sprays are for specific things, just like medicine. You don't just go in a drugstore and grab a bottle of something and just start chugging it. You know, you got to have a reason for spraying stuff. And there's no spray. There's no magic foo-foo dust out there, what I'm saying. Anyway, let's go to Gaucher, close to the Gulf Coast. Hey, Diane, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you? What can I help you with?
Yes, I think somebody put some weed growing in my yard because I have a lot of tall yellow leaves. Well, not leaves, but, you know, weeds and some tall purple ones. But my grass doesn't need to be mowed. So is there anything I can do manually myself to get rid of those or to help the problem before I get my next mowing?
Okay, you probably have either St. Augustine or centipede grass, one of those two. What will kill most weeds will kill St. Augustine or centipede. You know, unless we know specifically what the weed is, there's not anything. Once they start flowering, it's hard to kill a plant that's in bloom because it's sending all of its energy up in the flowers. Better to control them while they're small and little without hurting your grass. So I'm afraid right now, you know, until we can identify the flowers, which I can do if you send me a picture. That all I can recommend really safely for the grass is just to keep mowing it.
Okay.
There's not any spray that's going to kill flowering weeds in the lawn. It's not going to hurt the lawn. That's pretty much kind of a bottom line thing. I wish there was, but there ain't.
Okay. All right. I thought maybe I could get out there with some, not scissors, but some something to cut them down a little bit until the mowing time is again.
You know, if you got a phone on your camera, you can see me a good, clear, close-up picture. At least we've identified the flower. And while you're at it, see if there's butterflies and bees and stuff on it. See if you can't mow around a clump or two, because they might just be pretty, too. We don't have to have all grass.
Yeah, they are pretty. Okay.
Well, just leave some of them and cut some of them and just, you know, and shoot for that happy medium. That's a whole lot easier. Trust me.
All righty.
Okay. Appreciate it. oh, here I am lecturing. I'm lecturing grown-ups. I don't need to be lecturing grown-ups about what to do and how to do it. But if you need a solution, I'll come up best I can to come up with a solution. But sometimes there's just not a good solution. And since I'm nonprofit, I worked in garden centers, I've studied horticulture. If there's something I can recommend that I think is safe and effective, I'll recommend it. But if it's not, I'm going to do my best to try to look for that happy medium. That's sort of a hallmark of mine. Not let it grow, just whatever happens, happens. But what's the best, easiest, safest, all-around solution? If you want some more information, shoot me an email. We can get in a lot more detail than I can here on the radio. We're going to take a quick break. I'm horticulturist Phil DeRussy. You listen to the Gestalt Gardener here on Mississippi Public Broadcasting, the only place you'll find talk shows like this during the week. We'll be right back after this.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
Okay, that's welcome back to Horticulture. Here I am up in England. It's nice and cool here. They grow some stuff here. You know, you've heard of lupins, you've heard of foxglove. These are weeds in England. I mean, you walk on these country paths where they've got these brick walls that have been there, rock walls for 200 years, and they've got reseeding foxglove growing out of the rocks. They won't grow in Mississippi's hot, humid climate. But there's things that we can grow in England. Right now, my garden, which I had people sending me pictures of it. I've got purple coneflowers, lantana, black-eyed Susan, Gara, zinnias, little gem magnolia, vitex, okra. Those things won't grow in England, folks. They just won't grow here at all. So enjoy what we have. It's hot and humid, but enjoy the stuff that loves it. Meanwhile, let's slide back down towards Adams County to Natchez and talk with Lee. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Felda. How are you?
So far, so good. What's going on today? You getting rain like the, somebody called earlier from that, down in Meadville said it was raining. How about with you?
No rain. We never get rain.
It's raining south of you. What can I help you with?
Well, I have a couple of very large oleander, and they were badly damaged by the cold.
Right.
The spring came on so fast, I didn't get a chance to go out and cut off the dead, which was all
and
of
it. And it rained every day, too.
Yeah. So what happened is half of it's dead, half of it's not, and it's completely interdispersed and is blooming now. Should I do something? Is there anything to do, or should I just let it alone?
Well, any of the above or all of the above. You know, if you don't do anything, the dead stuff's going to just wither away. You know, sooner or later, it's going to be kind of ugly. If you cut it all down, it will sprout back out. It blooms on new growth, which is, you know, if you're paying somebody to do it, just get them to do that. If you do it yourself, why don't you just cut out the dead stuff and, you know, down close and leave some of the other stuff and, you know, just do some of each.
So it won't hurt it at this juncture.
Oleander, I've seen it growing in the Mojave Desert in full bloom. It blooms pretty much continuously in the tropics. So if you cut it down now, it'll put out new growth, and it will bloom later this summer and fall. Blooms on new growth, just like roses and crepe myrtles.
All right, then. That's what I'll do.
Okay, listen, wear some gloves and don't lick your fingers because the sap of oleander is poison.
Yes, it is. Thank you very much, Felda.
You
have a
good
day.
Luck on it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We had a lot of, thank you, Recall. That was Lee and Natchez. We got them lines open. Got plenty of time if you want to give us a call at 1-877-MPB-RING. I want to emphasize that here in Mississippi, our public broadcasting, the powers that be, you know, from Ronnie Agnew, the executive director, all the way on down through the channels, we're the only place where you can have live call-in local programs Monday through Friday, nonprofit. We don't sell stuff. And it's a really good opportunity to take advantage of local people doing their best to give you good, solid local information. So I hope you remember that every time we have a little thing rolls around to help us out. Anyway, if you have questions during the week, shoot me an email. I think that I'm caught up. I'm pretty sure that I've answered all of my emails. There's a couple of friends I haven't checked back with yet. But in general, I try to get to them that day or within a couple of 3 days. If you want to shoot me an email, go to garden@mpbonline.org and get sent right to me. garden@mpbonline.org. A couple of examples. I got an email this week from Troy Holmes. He said, I hope this finds you well. I'm doing some work for a family member at some apartments in Macomb, and this vine is everywhere. He sent me a picture. It reminds me of poison ivy, and I'm extremely allergic to poison ivy. The three leaves are about as big as my hand. Is it poisonous or what? Turned out, I've been saying all these years, poison ivy, the main thing, has got three leaves. But kudzu, he's got kudzu back there. And I looked at it, and kudzu looks like big fur. Poison ivy has real slick-looking leaves. Kudzu is kind of a, not sandpapery, but not real slick and smooth. But kudzu looks like giant poison ivy. Never knew that until he sent me a picture of it. Anyway, he can try to get rid of it if he wants to, or he can try to just eat it. All parts of kudzu are edible. Hey, Java, what you got going on? You just sent me a little buzz about a thank you letter?
Yeah, Felder, I got a thank you letter in the mail, and it actually came a little while ago, but I fall short of being perfect sometimes.
you got three kids, Java. Cut you some slack.
But it's real nice. It was it was made by Master Gardener Judy Kelly from the Adams County Master Gardeners, and they wanted to thank you and me for announcing their annual plant sale that they had in April. And I'm gonna put a picture up on our website, but it has a flower that is a Mornanda Didia flower.
Mornarda.
There you go. A Mornarda. Yes, yes, yes.
Pink flowers.
That's exactly what it is, yeah. So wanted to say thank you for them for thanking us for, announcing their event.
It's a team effort, man. We appreciate when we get a little feedback about that, too. Thank you,
yeah, it was a pleasant surprise.
Well, hey, I got another. Speaking of email, well, that was they actually took time to write and mail a letter.
Yes, it's a handwritten letter, and the flower, it's a flower press. So it's an actual flower pressed onto the note. It's like it's real awesome. It's so awesome.
Well, I'm sure that I'm sure you want to keep it, but maybe we can have it framed and hang it up someplace. If not, I want it for my little cabin.
We can fight over it.
There you go. I got it. Hey, I got another email from Clark Blakeney. Said, I have a variety of grass in my lawn, Bermuda, Centipede, and St. Augustine. My question is, should I mulch or bag my grass clippings when I mow? I didn't bag it last year, and I noticed what appeared to be a lot of thatch build up in certain areas. Just wondering if bagging the grass clippings would help. And the answer is no. Every publication on lawn care nowadays, they all say better to let your clippings fall. Clippings don't actually make thatch. Thatch is built up of old stems and debris and stuff. But the grass clippings themselves actually provide nitrogen, which help the old stuff decompose. The trick is mow a little bit more often. If you're leaving big clumps of grass out there, it's going to shade stuff out. So anyway, mow regularly. Mow high. Raise your mower in the summertime. This helps grass cope with the heat and the humidity and the drought of summertime. Mowing on the high side is better for your grass. And recycle those clippings. Mow regularly. Let those clippings fall back and recycle. And if they're clumping up out on the lawn, you're mowing a little bit. You need them to mow a little bit more often. Hate to say that, but that's sort of a turf type thing. The rule of thumb, try not to cut more than about a third or so of the grass at a time. You know, the blades. That way it leaves enough to make energy, but if you're cutting it when it's wet or when it's too tall, it's going to clump up, and that's going to cause dead spots. But anyway, grass clippings regularly just mowed into the lawn don't create thatch. They actually have a helpful effect on that. Plus, they feed you worms. So if you do it anyway, hope you got a leaf pile or compost pile where you can pile those up someplace else and grow some dirt out of it. Those kind of little easy tips. Doesn't matter to me whether it's grass or not, or wildflowers or not, or vegetables or flowers. No, it doesn't matter to me. Whatever you want to do, we're going to try to help you with that. If you want to use natural stuff, or you don't mind using chemicals, doesn't really matter to me. That's between you and your conscience. But if you want to know the easiest, best, most practical solution, I'll give it my best shot. That's what I do. Again, email me during the week, garden@mpbonline.org. I've got Good Talk Gardener Production, Mississippi Public Broadcasting. My producer is laid back, my hardworking Java Chapman, and our phone greeter is our boss, Jason Klein. I'm going to be thinking of all of y'all as we get out and about here in Northern England, but meanwhile, hunker down, stay cool, stay hydrated, wear a hat. If you get a chance to take a kid on a field trip to a farmer's market or to a garden center, give them a $5 bill and let them play around and learn about what we know is the best way to do, and that's to get dirty. See y'all next week.